Narada Muni's pastimes in Dwarka, because as we were hearing, he's free to go anywhere. He's free to go anywhere in the spiritual world, and he's free to go anywhere in the material world. So generally, it's very important for us to listen to the instructions he gives when he's traveling in the material world, because we're in the material world, and we're quite entrenched in our way of thinking, so therefore his instructions are very pertinent. However, he's free, he doesn't need to give anyone any instructions or do anything in particular. He can go and do and see and act as he likes. So sometimes he likes to visit Dwarka. In fact, it is said that he lives in Dwarka. He lives in Dwarka and he travels throughout the material world, staying only a short time wherever he goes. Now, two people cursed him. We'll hear about this afternoon. They cursed him. Now, just imagine, I was thinking this morning, if somebody cursed you, that you could not sit down anywhere for more than 2 seconds. You might think, oh, it's not such a big deal, I'll just keep myself busy. But you sit down to take a meal, but you can't stay and eat. You have to get up and go outside. You sit down to answer a letter or something, you can't. You only have 2 minutes and you have to move somewhere else. You have to continuously move. And Narada, when he was cursed, he was already a transcendental personality. So this was going to be a forever curse. So he was cursed. He could not stay in any place for more than 3 days. And so Narada travels and travels and travels, and he accepted this curse. But that would be all right if you were going here and there in places that were just something not interesting. You had to do some dutiful work. But if you came to a place that you liked very much, and now you thought, now I'm going to stay in this place and set up my house. I've been traveling and traveling and traveling. Now I can have some peace and have some security. But no, you cannot, because you have to keep by the obligation of this curse. But Narada didn't mind his curse. He took his curse very nicely. He understood the mentality of the person who had cursed him, and he didn't accept it with any resentment. However, he has a special benediction that no curses can work in the spiritual world. We're curse-free in the transcendental domain. So when he goes to Dwarka, he can stay as long as he wants. So one day we will hear two visits that Narada paid to Dwarka. So the first one took place one day when Krishna was seated in his assembly house. Does anyone know the name of his assembly house?
Sudharma.
Sudharma, yes. In his Sudharma assembly house, surrounded by so many ministers, because in Dwarka Krishna is like a king, like something like, you could say, but more than Lord Ram. Because Ram, he has only one wife, and he shows the Dharma, everything to do perfectly in this world, how to behave in family life, how to lead one's life in the perfect, ideal way. But Krishna, he is not really fully boundaried by any obligation. So Krishna, he also shows how to lead one's life in an exemplary way, yet he does something extraordinary. He has 16,108 palaces in which he's living at exactly the same time. Now, this is a little inconceivable. When I was preparing this class, I was thinking myself, in my own back of my mind where I don't like to go, that I don't know if I believe this. 16,000, what would it be like? Because you say it all the time, but you don't really have any picture in your mind. So then when I was reading this chapter, I read it very carefully, slowly, trying to imagine what it would be like. And of course, I could not. But that, at least to get some idea, what is the difference between Krishna and an ordinary man? This is very important, because a man can come along with some mystic power and he can say, look, I can make gold. You see this? I can make gold. And everyone goes, that's amazing. Especially if he gives you the gold. Then you think, wow, he's amazing. And we have a relative idea. He's much greater than me. I can't do that. How did he do that? And then the mind starts thinking, maybe he had it in his pocket and he used some magic trick. No, look, he's made gold and given gold to everyone in this room. This is amazing. He must be... And then somebody might say, he could be God. And the ignorant people will think, he may be. Because who have you ever seen? Have you ever seen something like this? No, I haven't seen anything like this. He can do this, he can do that. So many things. And foolish people who have no knowledge, no learning, no education spiritually, they may be PhDs. They may have so much material education, but they're illiterate spiritually. They take this person's significance as far more than it actually is. And so therefore he fools them all. And he takes their gold instead. And they give him many things and he becomes very happy to receive them. Of course, without any sort of sense of selfishness or anything, he will use them all in the service of humanity. But he rakes it in. So we have to become spiritually intelligent. We send our children to university, and when you ask any respected Indian family, oh, what do your children do? They will say, oh, my son is a doctor, and my daughter, she is a lawyer, and this one has a PhD in this. And they will always cite you all the credentials. They're very anxious that they can cite to you the credentials of their children from their university education. And if you said, oh, and what do they do spiritually? Do they have a bhakti shastri? A what? Do they have, you want a PhD, do they have a bhakti vaibhav? I've never heard of such a thing. Oh, sometimes they go to the temple. Yes, we encourage them to go. It makes them good. Something, something, something. Helps them in their life. But people are so foolish, so unintelligent, that they put these academic things up so high and they put the spiritual things down so low. And so therefore we have a society of cheaters and cheated. You can take your pick. Which would you like? Would you like to cheat people or would you prefer to be cheated by them? You have two choices. This is modern society. Spiritually illiterate, spiritually retarded, spiritually paraplegic. They need a hospital to take care of all these spiritually degraded, helpless, foolish, crippled people. But they don't know this. And Srila Prabhupada was trying to open such hospitals all over the world for people who are completely deaf, dumb and blind to spiritual things. So first we must observe these characteristics upon ourselves and accept that this is my condition. Otherwise, when we hear about Krishna, we will think, I have never seen anything like this. So how can I believe this? Maybe somebody has made this up. Maybe this is some mythology, some, you know, moral stories, just to keep humanity on the track. But no, it is not that. This is transcendence. This is what is beyond this world. And we are ignorant. What are we? What did we hear that we were yesterday? Rascals. We are immersed in matter and trying to enjoy it to our heart's content and struggling to accept transcendental reality. But Narada is not like that. So one day he visited the Sudama meeting house and all the ministers were there and Krishna was there. Just one Krishna. One Krishna. So everyone would think there is one Krishna. If one person walks in this room, we would say there is one. But if you go in the kitchen and find there are five of the same person, you would be a little bewildered. What? Come back in here, there's one. And there, there's five. So Krishna becomes one. And everyone in Dwarka, no one in Dwarka thinks Krishna is living in 16,108 palaces as different Krishnas. Imagine that. How mystical that is. Nobody thinks like that. They don't think Krishna goes home and becomes 16,000. They think Krishna's one. He's with me. He's not with anyone else. He's with me. This is the sweetness of the spiritual world. Everyone thinks Krishna is with me. And I want to give everything to him. So Narada comes into the assembly house. But just before Narada entered, a messenger came. And this messenger, he was an unknown man. He was not known to any of the people in the assembly. But he came in on behalf of a great assembly of kings who had been arrested by Jarasandha. And he had imprisoned them. So this messenger had come from these kings begging, "Please, Krishna, we are in such difficulty. We've been taken away from our families, our wives, our children are all suffering. So much problem is there for us. Please come and kill Jarasandha immediately and release us from this terrible suffering. You are the friend of the fallen, the friend of those in need. You are the one to protect us. Please come." And all the messengers, when the messenger came, all the ministers immediately said, "Yes, you must go and do this. We want Jarasandha killed anyway. He's such a menace. But you must go and represent your mercy to these kings." And meanwhile, Narada enters. So Narada here is coming to Dwarka, bearing a mass of golden matted locks on his head. Supremely effulgent, Narada entered like the sun. Now Narada comes into this assembly, and Krishna is so happy to see Narada that he offers all respects to him, invites him, "Please sit down," worships him and treats him with all proper etiquette. And then he wishes to speak some kind words to him. So he says, "Since it is impossible for you to suffer any misfortune, it would be improper for me to ask you about your well-being. So therefore, I ask if the three worlds, the whole three worlds, are now free of fear." So Narada replies, "How should I know this?" And Krishna says, "Your great quality as a powerful person," because any powerful person has some particular greatness, "your great quality as a powerful person is that you wander everywhere. And thus from you one can obtain knowledge of all the planets. Nothing is unknown to you." "That being so," Krishna says to Narada, "I want to know what the Pandavas are doing." Specifically, he wants to know about the Pandavas. He says, "Since you know how Jarasandha can be killed," so he's dropping a little hint here because they want Krishna to go and kill Jarasandha. So Narada, he thinks this is very humorous. Krishna is treating him like he's the all-knowing sage. And he knows who Krishna is. He says, "By your maya, you bewilder everyone. Therefore, it is astonishing that you ask about the fearlessness of the people in the material, the whole material world, because you know everything. But you are now playing the role of an ordinary human being. So therefore, it is not at all amazing." So then he says, "I have come to see," this is what Narada had come to see, "I have come to see you, to see how you cover your omniscience in your human-like pastimes." This is what Narada wanted to see. "I know you know everything, but I want to see how you're doing this. This is most astonishing." Just like, say, for example, if a great and famous person, say a great movie star, walked in here wearing a very humble dress of a devotee and sat down, no makeup on her face, none of the decorations of her position in the world, and she's known throughout the whole world, everyone knows her, and somebody would nudge somebody else and say, "Do you know who that is?" And they'd say, "No, who? That's really?" And then it would start going around in the whole room, everybody would know. And they'd all be watching her to see, why is she doing this? She's coming just like one of us, but she's so great. She's so beautiful. She's so amazing. But look, she's looking like one of us. And you would be quite fascinated to know why she's here. So in a much absolutely greater sense, Narada wants to see out of his curiosity how Krishna can hide his all-knowingness and act like an ordinary human being who doesn't know anything. Who's asking other people in the three worlds, are they still fearful? So Narada says, I offer my obeisances to you who are completely inconceivable. It is not surprising that you ask me this. And then he replies to the question. The first question, he was asked two questions. The first question was, are the three worlds free of fear? And the second question was, how are the Pandavas? What are the Pandavas doing? He says, if you ask me about the fearlessness of the universe, I would reply that I can see many people who are bewildered by your Maya, and therefore they are affected with fear. But there are also those who become fearless by hearing and chanting about your glories. So here is Narada's instruction. And even though you know, I will tell you everything. So then he starts talking about the Pandavas. And he says, Yudhisthira wants to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. So please bless him by going to see him immediately. Krishna says, what purpose will be achieved by seeing me? Why does he wish to see me? Narada says, anybody is purified by chanting your glories. What to speak of seeing you? Krishna says, but why are they so eager to see me? And Narada says, your fame is spread like a canopy to purify the whole universe. They desire to see you. Why do they desire to see Krishna? We might think they desire to see him because he's great. They desire to see him because they love him. They desire to see him. So many thoughts may come in our mind. But listen to the answer that Narada gives. They desire to see you because their minds have become purified. They desire to see you because their minds have become purified. Now, Narada has come in. He's very authoritative, great personality, and he's saying, go immediately and see the Pandavas. And the ministers weren't very happy with this. They didn't want this. They wanted him to go to see, to kill Jarasandha. So Krishna, he uses skillful words to impress on Uddhava, because Uddhava is the chief minister, what is actually his desire, because he wants to do what Narada wants. But the ministers want him to do the other. So he says to Narada, what should I do? And Narada thinks very carefully and he comes up with a wonderful solution. He says, you should go with Narada immediately to see the Pandavas. But you cannot perform the Rajasuya until all the unfavorable kings have submitted. So as soon as you arrive with the Pandavas, you should go immediately to Jarasandha and you should kill him. So Uddhava gives the expert combination of these two directives and Krishna is very pleased. But another time Krishna had Narada's darshan in Dwarka, and this was the pastime that I began my study of Narada Muni by reading, and the one that that I found very, very astonishing. And this is that Narada had heard already that Krishna was married, and he married 16,000 queens. And he thought, this is very hard to imagine. I want to see this for myself. So the great sage Narada heard that Krishna had married 16,000 wives, and he decided he was astonished that Krishna had expanded himself into 16,000 forms. And married these wives simultaneously in different palaces. Think about that. Just think about that. 16,000 marriages all going on at the same time. So wait. That means that Vasudeva and Devaki go to the first one. Ugrasena goes to the second one. You know, and a few people come to each one because they're all going on at the same time. No. Krishna's yoga maya is so perfect. Everyone went to everyone. So not only Krishna expanded 16,000 times, But all his associates expanded. Now we would think, wait, if I'm supposed to be in here doing this and in there doing that and over there doing this, it's going to be very confusing for me. Because that's because we only have one limited mind and body. And we identify with this mind and body. Too much absorption in matter means I believe this is me. And we all do this. So we're not going to point to someone and say, this is one of your faults. This is everybody's failure, especially in Kali Yuga. We have no access to anything further than that. But on the transcendental plane, somebody can experience many things simultaneously. And therefore the residents of Dwarka, their position is inconceivable when we try to compare it to our own. How would I like that? Would I like that? No, I wouldn't like that. Oh, that's not very attractive. No, we have to understand that what is being spoken of, it cannot come within the purview of our limitation, our impure mind. Our mind is not yet purified. Transcendentalized and purified are the same thing. So Narada, he is not like that. And he thought this was very astonishing, and he came. And he walked here and there through Dwarka, and he saw the beautiful gardens and the parks, and the birds and the peacocks, and the lilies and the beautiful ponds. And then he saw that there were so many palaces, beautiful places where people were walking. There were gardens, boulevards, as Srila Prabhupada calls them. There were marketplaces, but not like the marketplaces here. Everything was tranquil and of the Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness. But all the variety that we see here, this is a very important point. I will tell you this. This is a secret of spiritual life. When the penny drops and you understand this principle, spiritual life becomes much, much easier. And the principle is this, that whatever you find here that attracts you, whatever is holding on to you and you're thinking, I can't leave this, whatever it is here, is a shadowy reflection of there. Good and bad is all there in perfection. But we're absorbed here. And this is natural. But when we're absorbed here, we're seeing this or wanting this or striving for that, doing so many things, are absorbed in this reality. We think the spiritual world is something like I'm creating it from the imagination of man looking at this world. Krishna's a man, so he must be like this. This is like this. That world is created by sages taking the reference point of this world. This is how we think. But in reality, it's the other way round. That's reality, and this is a shadow of that. So what does this mean? How does this help me? It means that whatever I'm hankering for or I'm attached to here, I'm only getting a tiny drop of what I'm looking for if I'm looking for it here. I can get that in total fullness there, and I'll get it in a shadowy way here. Just as a reflection in the mirror of an orange, and the orange, the reflection in the mirror, it has some semblance, it looks similar, but the taste isn't the same. So when we get this point, when this point registers in our own consciousness, spiritual life becomes easier because we start putting our attention and our assets over there. Now we're putting all our assets here. And we're thinking I have to work so hard to get all my security and assets and everything in place for my family. Not only my family, then there's generations to come and generations to come. They should also be taken care of. And they're all here. But a shift takes place, a subtle, gradual shift, where we start to see, this, I want to know about this. Now, if you're going to make an investment, somebody said to you, don't invest your money here in Australia, it's a bad investment, everything's going to fall apart here. But I know this place where anything you invest, you're going to make 1,000,000% immediately in that place. Invest there, then what would we do? We'd all get on the internet and start looking it up, Googling away, trying to find out something about this place where I could make possibly this massive investment. We'd be very interested. So we have to ask ourselves, why? What is the flatness in my heart that makes me not ever think like that? That I should find out about the spiritual world. What is that due to? And Narada has already explained what that's due to. It's due to the fact that our heart and our mind is not yet fully purified. And to the degree that we're not yet fully purified is the degree that we will perceive inside our heart we don't have that kind of faith. I don't have that quality of feeling or faith. I have something, I'm doing something, it's going on, but I don't feel like that. But this is the gift that we should be seeking. A live, enlivened and alive faith. And I speak for myself, I'm not sitting here saying, I have this. And you poor creatures do not have it. But I am saying, we should pray for this, because this is the greatest treasure. So Narada came into Dwarka, he looked around, it was so beautiful, the city was so beautiful. Everything was exquisite and divine. There was incense coming from the windows of the houses. Everything was clean, purified and transcendental. Everything was gem bedecked. The roads were clean and covered in very various beautiful ways. Flowers were everywhere. Everybody was so beautiful and tranquil, and they weren't getting into the trains and trams and their cars to go to work today. They were all completely, as Prabhupada was saying, we're already relaxed. Why do we have to work hard for relaxation? We already have relaxation. So this is the transcendental dimension. So they were all there, and Narada came first of all into the first palace of Krishna, the prime palace of Krishna, which is the palace of Rukmini Devi. And there he saw Krishna was sitting with Rukmini. And there were so many maid servants were there, and they were also very beautiful. But Rukmini was personally fanning Krishna. And as soon as Narada Muni entered, Krishna immediately jumped up. Like an ordinary person, if a great saintly person came into their house, and he immediately sat Narada down in a wonderful seat, and he brought all the paraphernalia to worship him and to bathe his feet and to glorify him. He offered arati to Narada. He treated him in such a respectful manner because he is a Brahmin. And then he asked Narada, Narada, what can I do in your service? Now Narada took part in all of this, even though he knew who Krishna was, because he understood that his behavior was to teach others. So he accepted this worship. And when he was asked for anything he wanted, anything, you can have anything, what do you want? He said, you are the only shelter of all conditioned souls. My dear Lord, you have kindly asked what you can do for me. In answer to this, I simply request that I may not forget your lotus feet at any time. I do not care where I may be, but I pray that I may always be allowed to constantly remember your lotus feet. Now, interestingly, you'll see throughout the Bhagavatam that different persons who are very elevated in their status in life, when they were asked, what do you want? I can give you anything. I can give you even a higher position. What do you need and require? They very frequently have this same request. Please don't help me. Please help me not to forget you. In other words, please help me to remember you. So we should think on this. And sometimes I have found myself in the past thinking about this, why do they just ask that? Why do they ask for more? Please, you know, my mind is so disturbed, please help my mind to become peaceful, you know. I have so many problems with my family, please work out all the problems of my family. Please do this, please do that, please do this. And I was thinking, okay, anything, what do you want to ask? Okay, please help me, I've got very bad health, and I want to be, you know, in very good health, please help me with that. But for how long can that help remain? What am I really asking? I'm really asking for something eternal. Because when I say, please help me with my health, is that only for 5 years or 10 years or 20 years? How long do I want my health to be good? I want my health to always be good. And how long do I want my mind to be peaceful? My mind is going up and down and causing me so much anxiety. How long do I want that? Do you want it just for a second? Okay, here, have a peaceful moment. No, I want my mind always to be. I want to always be in good spirits. Well, then you're asking for something that entails eternity. And if it entails eternity and not this world, then there has to be a procedure to get that. You can't just have that because you want it in this body. It won't come. You've seen everybody has to die. So you're asking for something unreasonable in your present status. So you can ask it, and Krishna may give it, but what he will give you as well is he will give you an eternal situation because you don't want it to end. So how do I get that? Then where do I want to be if I'm eternal? Do you want to be with him? Do you want to be alone? Do you want to be with your family forever and ever and ever and ever? At what age would you like to be with your family? Would you like to be with your baby son? But he might grow up and have nice children. So then, and then it becomes very complicated. And for whatever we ask in this world, you'll see it's complex. It sounds simple, but it's complicated because we want something else as well to support that. And then we need something else to make that work well. And so we'll ask for many things. But you've been asked to ask for one thing. So, oh dear, now I have to really think hard. What one thing can I ask for? If I could remember Krishna in every situation, I would have no difficulty whatsoever, even though the situation around me is difficult. If I could remember him, and there are examples of that. For example, Queen Kunti, who was put into one difficulty after another, just to show us, because we may be praying, please make my life so happy, I want everything to work nicely for me. It works so nicely for this person, for that person. If Srila Prabhupada had come to the West, and in a magical way, everything had just gone up and up and up and up, like he was a demigod, he just dropped into this world, all his mission was taken care of, he disappeared again. Then we would think, oh, that's all right for him. But when we read about his struggles, when we see he had difficulty with his family, he had to push against so much resistance, he had heart failure on the boat coming over. He was teaching young people who had no Vedic background. He was doing so many things. Then we can think and find some consolation in our own difficulty from his difficulties. So when we see someone like Kunti Devi, an intimate associate of Krishna, placed in one difficulty after another, when we're in difficulty, we can think, ah, Kunti Devi, what did she do? How did she manage with her difficult situations? And we can look into the Bhagavatam, and we can see an example, how she thought. It will be different from how we think, but our minds require to become purified if we wish to think spiritually. So therefore we have something to turn to. You could say a role model. Now, the doubting mind can still say, yes, but it's a lila, and I'm here. I'm strangled by all my anxieties in the material realm, but she always remembers Krishna. But why does she always remember Krishna? Because she wants to always remember Krishna. And there, when you said that, you were pointing out that the difference was that she remembers Krishna and you don't. So why don't you ask to remember Krishna? And if you can remember Krishna, then you won't have any problems. So in this way, we have to, and this is a very important point. Srila Prabhupada explains that just as Narada is being asked questions, we have to ask our intelligence questions. And we will hear about this later. Narada Muni is speaking about Puranjan, and Srila Prabhupada explains, just as so many questions need to be asked, the intelligence is looking at the world asking questions, we should ask questions to our intelligence. We should make our intelligence intelligent. And this can be done only in contact with Krishna. So Narada went from one place to another place. He wanted to see all the activities of Krishna and he visited all 16,108 palaces. Now if he stayed for 5 minutes in every palace, how long is that? Do we have any brilliant mathematicians here? It's quite a bit of time, I think. So he was traveling from place to place to place to place and he saw Krishna. In one palace, he found him engaged in offering oblations to the sacrificial fire and performing ritualistic ceremonies of the Vedas as enjoined for householders. In another palace, he found Krishna performing the Pancha Yajna sacrifice, which is compulsory for householders. And in another palace, he found Krishna engaged in feeding brahmanas after performing ritualistic yajnas. And in another palace, he found Krishna silently chanting the Gayatri Mantra. Now, when I was reading these different palaces, I was thinking, it's interesting because Krishna's doing some things, of course, that are vastly different than ourselves. But in others, on a transcendental plane, he's doing things that are similar that householders do. He's not doing like in Vrindavan, he's playing with cows all day and dancing with gopis, and we can't play with cows all day, we have to work hard and so on and so forth. But you know, we can think he was a little boy and he lived in a village. But here, now, he's doing very practical things. Vedically practical. In some palaces, Krishna was found riding horses or elephants or chariots or wandering around. And somewhere he was found lying down taking rest. Somewhere he was sitting in his chair, being praised by the prayers of devotees. Sometimes he was found consulting his ministers on very important matters of business. And in one palace he was found surrounded by many young girls enjoying in a swimming pool. In another palace he was found engaged in giving well-decorated cows in charity to the Brahmins. And in another palace, he was found hearing the narrations of the Puranas. He was hearing Shastra. And such as also the Mahabharata. Somewhere Krishna was found enjoying the company of his wife by joking with her. And somewhere he was with his wife in some religious function. Somewhere he was found looking into his economic development. Krishna, he's thinking, oh, how can we arrange this for Dwarka and make this work very... He's doing these activities, but this is the transcendental, very important. As long as we have not made this transition, we will think, oh, Krishna, he just sounds like us. This is nothing special. He's just, this is just made up. Our mind, our atheistic mind, will tell us in our ear something like this. So therefore we have to be very careful that we hear properly through Srila Prabhupada's explanations and purports so that our atheistic mind doesn't succeed in foiling Krishna's plan to reveal himself to you. In one palace he was found sitting in meditation as if he were concentrating his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond these material universes. And then in another place, Krishna was found satisfying his elderly superiors by supplying them many things which they needed. And somewhere else, Narada found that Krishna was engaged in discussing topics of fighting. Somewhere else, he was making peace with enemies. And somewhere, Krishna was found discussing the ultimate auspicious activity for the entire human society with his elder brother Balaram. Narada saw Krishna engaged in getting his sons and daughters married with suitable brides and bridegrooms in due course of time. And sometimes he was found bidding farewell to his daughter, and sometimes he was receiving a daughter-in-law. People throughout the whole city were astonished to see such pomp and ceremonies. Somewhere Krishna was seen engaged in performing different types of sacrifices to the demigods. Ah, so just imagine if you were to read this without knowing any philosophy, without knowing anything from Srila Prabhupada. You would be convinced that he's an ordinary person. He's worshipping demigods. And you would say, he's worshipping demigods, why can't I worship demigods? How can God worship demigods? We would have so many misconceptions. And practically speaking, it is only through the acharyas who explain all of these things very carefully to us that we can avoid such misconceptions. Because they have the ability to see Krishna's pastimes like on television. So everybody knows what television is. It's conveying an image from a far distant place and you can see it right there before you. So Srila Prabhupada said, they can see, so we can understand the example. He said, they can see as if they have a spiritual television in their heart. They can see Krishna. They can explain why Krishna is doing this and why Krishna is doing that. Everything they know from their own realized position. So Krishna was performing so many activities, and Narada saw all these activities, and he was smiling within himself. And he began to address Krishna as follows. He said, "My dear Lord Krishna, you are the master. You are the supreme of all mystic powers." So the mystic who can provide the gold in his hand, or the mystic who can read everyone's mind in this room, or the mystic magician who can turn everyone's clocks to the same time, 5 hours late at the same time when he wants to show his power. These are mystical acts, but nobody can do what Krishna can do. He is the master of all mystical powers. You are the object of the meditation of great mystics, and the extent of your power is inconceivable. But by your mercy, because of my being engaged in your loving service at your lotus feet, you have kindly revealed to me the actions of your internal potency. My dear Lord, you are worshipable by all. Please give me your blessings so that I may be able to travel all over the universe singing the glories of your transcendental activities. This is Narada's desire, that I remember you and I glorify you. Krishna's reply, he said, "My dear Narada, you know that I am the supreme instructor and the perfect follower of religious principles. I am therefore executing such principles to teach the whole world how to act. My dear son, it is my desire that you not be bewildered by such demonstration of my internal energy." So we should pray like this too. Please, 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 I'm so bewildered. I'm bewildered by the external energy. I can't see you anywhere. I think I hear you, I hear about you in the morning, or I hear about you at the temple, and then I go to work and I can't see you there. And then I come home and I can't see you there. I can't see you anywhere. I look everywhere. People are busy doing so many things. I don't see you there. I see all these activities going on as if they have no controller, as if these people are free to do whatever they want. Please. Please, you are the master of mystic power. Please let me be able to see the demonstration first of your external energy, how it is acting. And then, if you'd be so kind, how you act internally, your devotional energy. So Krishna was engaged in the so-called householder life in order to teach the people how one can sanctify one's household life, although he may be attached to the imprisonment of material existence. Actually, now here is a philosophical point. One is obliged to continue the term of material existence because of householder life. So first we're hearing how to execute householder life, and now we're hearing of the negative aspect of householder life, that this is what is keeping you here, because it is ever expanding. One gets something and then one needs something else and so on and so forth. And therefore one develops roots. And these roots go downwards and downwards and downwards, deeper and deeper. So Krishna is showing the example how you can live in family life in an exemplary way by remembrance of him. Krishna, so Narada then, after praying in this way, Narada saw one single Krishna living in 16,000 palaces by his expansions. Due to his inconceivable energy, he was visible in each and every individual queen's palace. Krishna has unlimited power, and Narada's astonishment was boundless upon observing again and again the demonstration of Krishna's internal energy. Krishna behaved by his personal example as if he were very much attached to dharma, artha, karma, moksha. These four principles of material existence are necessary for the spiritual advancement of human society. And although Krishna had no need to do so, he exhibited his household activities so that people may follow his footsteps for their own interest. Krishna satisfied Narada in every way. Narada was very much pleased seeing Krishna's activities in Dwarka, and thus he departed. In narrating the activities of Krishna in Dwarka, Sukadeva Goswami explained to Maharaj Parikshit how Krishna descends to this material universe by the agency of his internal potency and personally exhibits the principles which, if followed, these are the principles, he's exhibiting the principles, not the details. Our details may be different. My life may be different than yours. I may have such and such a good and such bad in my life. I may have such and such a problem. You may have another problem. But he's exhibiting the principle. So he descends to the material world to personally exhibit the principles which, if followed, can lead one to achieve the ultimate goal of life. All the queens of Dwarka, more than 16,000 in number, extended their feminine attractive features in the transcendental service of the Lord by smiling and serving. And the Lord was pleased to behave with them by enjoying household life. One should definitely know that such pastimes cannot be performed by anyone but Lord Sri Krishna. Lord Sri Krishna is the original cause of the creation, maintenance and dissolution of the whole cosmic manifestation. Therefore, anyone who attentively hears the narration of Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka or supports a preacher of the Krishna consciousness movement, Srila Prabhupada has added, will certainly find it very easy to traverse the path of liberation and taste the nectar of the lotus feet of Krishna. Thus, he will be engaged in Krishna's devotional service. So yesterday we heard of Narada visiting Vrindavan. He goes to Vrindavan, he goes to Dwarka, he goes to Mathura. He travels within the spiritual world very, very freely. And he visits all kinds of different persons. When he comes to this world, he enters into Krishna's pastimes there as well. Practically speaking, he goes to Kamsa and tells Kamsa, you know, you are going to save these sons of Devaki, but do you know that on my way here, I happened to be walking by the Ganga and I saw all these demigods and they were all coming together. And when they saw me, they followed me and they came and we all walked together and they were talking to me about the problems here on earth. And then they came to an assembly of Lord Brahma. And do you know what they were discussing in that assembly? They were discussing how to kill you. That's what they're interested in. So you should be very, very careful. Because any of Devaki's sons could easily be the person who's going to kill you. So Kamsa, having received Narada very well and hearing this, he decided to go to work and he started to kill every one of his children. And why did Narada do this? He wanted Krishna to come very quickly. He wanted Krishna to come and kill Kamsa and display his pastimes. And then, just before Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes were about to end, Narada came to Vrindavan. He came and he saw Krishna in a secluded place and he offered his obeisances and his prayers to Krishna in Vrindavan. And as soon as he left Vrindavan, having spoken to Krishna very nicely and telling him that soon he would see him in Mathura, he went to Kamsa and he said to him again, he said, do you know that actually Vasudeva cheated you? And Kamsa, you can imagine, he's furious. He said, Vasudeva cheated you. He took his son. He hid him from you. So he's there in Vrindavan waiting to kill you. And so then Kamsa becomes really angry and says, that's it. I'm going to kill Vasudeva. I'm going to kill him immediately. He calls his guards and Narada says, oh no, I wouldn't do that if I was you. If you do that, you'll really be in trouble. Because as soon as you kill Vasudeva, then his sons will flee. They'll be terrified and they'll hide. Don't do that. Just put Vasudeva quietly somewhere in prison, keep him to the side, and make a plan to get his sons to come here to Mathura. It's very simple. You send somebody to Vrindavan to bring him here and then make a plan to kill him. Because that's easy. You're so powerful. They're just little boys. They'll be easy for you. And he gives a few hints how it could be done. But Kamsa has his own plans also. So then Narada again, he leaves. He comes in, he tells something, he leaves. He goes to Dwarka. Chitraleka comes to Dwarka to kidnap Krishna's great-grandson, Aniruddha, his grandson Aniruddha. But Chitraleka doesn't know how to enter Dwarka. She doesn't know anything. Narada Muni tells her, oh, there is a yoga process. You can come in if you do this, 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 and this. So he's there in the background all the time, playing some role or another to increase and to hurry up Krishna's pastimes in some very sweet way. So this is Narada Muni. This is his activities in the spiritual world. This afternoon and tomorrow morning, we will go back and hear more of his pastimes in dealing with the material energy. And tomorrow we will hear his instructions to a very, very, very attached person. A pious person who is totally engrossed in material life. And how does he deal with him? So this is very important. And there's a benediction given on this particular exchange between Narada. And it is said that anybody who hears this exchange will become gradually free of the bodily concept of life. And then, as a result, they can be situated in their true identity. So we should be eager to hear how Narada does that. All right. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Yes. We have seen Krishna how in his different 16,000 forms performing activities as a ideal grihastha and
yes.
exemplifying it for others. But what is the name of it? Because anyway, he is doing it in Dwarka, where all his people around him are his either devotees eternally or they are sadhana siddha devotees. So for them, dharma artha kama moksha is something they have given up. And
yes.
They have come to the higher platform. So what is
is the need? Because this is Dwarka, this is Dwarka, we say the spiritual world, but this is not Dwarka in Goloka Vrindavan. This is Dwarka as a manifest in this material plane. So Krishna has two levels in which his pastimes go on. They go on eternally in Goloka, Vrindavan, Dwarka, Svetadui, up in the spiritual sky. And there it is different. It is eternal, this is eternal, but the characteristics of these two planes are different. And there are many philosophical explanations given in Brahma Samhita about this. So we do not mistake and think, oh, this is something, that's something else. Like this is like going to heaven and this is living on earth. No, Krishna's pastimes in the material world are eternally taking place. Over and over and over, the same pastime is taking place in a different place. Like a road show, going from one village to another village to another village. So what is the purpose of these pastimes? One of the purposes of these pastimes is for Krishna's pleasure and for the introduction of the jivas who have become purified and able to enter into his pastimes. They enter first into his pastimes here on the worldly plane, on the material plane. He does not touch this plane, but he appears there. So these pastimes have a double effect. They have an effect of giving opportunity to those who are purified to come and become part of Krishna's pastimes. And they have an instruction for everybody else. Because Krishna is the master of everyone, we heard. He's impartial to those who are indifferent to him. But he's very partial to his devotees. He wants them to be reclaimed from their ignorance of him. So here, these pastimes in Dwarka, they have a human-like semblance because they're to teach us something. So we see Krishna, he's engaged in so many religious activities. I should be engaged in so many religious activities. Krishna is very this, very that, so many different things. So these activities are meant for teaching others. But not the associates who are already there, but all those who have not yet become his associates.
So it's mainly not for the residents of Dwarka?
It's not for the residents of Dwarka. He's showing an example. the residents of Dwarka do this anyway. Because this is what I'm saying. This is reality. This is not reality. Now we think this is reality. Why is that like that? Seems a little bit like here. Oh, you've got it upside down. Turn it the other way around and it all makes sense. That's what takes place there, and therefore something takes place here. But here it's impure because we have ourself in the center. We're selfish. So as we become purified of that, we get everything we're looking for here, it's there. It's not here, it's there. That hasn't dawned on us yet. No, it's here. And I take my spiritual attributes help me with my life. No, it's the other way around. When we come to that point, spiritual life becomes easier to understand. Yes. Yes.
This question is regarding the last night class.
Last night's class.
Yeah, you mentioned that Narada Muni was meditating on the super soul and Krishna appeared in the sound form.
Yes.
And he said, you know, you have to wait for me to say because you have to clear something in mind.
Yes.
I was just wondering, what is our condition of mind in the our condition? Like, you know, Krishna appeared in Narada Muni so pure and taking prasadam of the remnants of the transcendent people.
Yes.
And still be not being able to see Krishna.
Well, Narada Muni thought about that, because remember Narada's position is he's the acharya of bhakti. So he's thinking about that. What is our position? Here we are. What's our hope, right, we would say. So in the next millennium, when he came back being able to see Krishna easily. He had struggled. But he shows his example. He kept going. He was grateful that he'd seen him at all. But then he thought about that, so he gives a process. There's something called the Narada Pancharatra. And this is why Narada is considered to be the acharya of bhakti. He wrote down all the principles of bhakti so that people who had no bhakti could gain bhakti. So even though this is not the same thing, we know this because our consciousness is not pure, we also can see Krishna. We can see Krishna more than Narada saw Krishna. But we can't understand that it's Krishna. We can go to the temple and stand in front of the deities. So this is the process of the Narada Pancharatra. Is through the chanting and the deity worship, you can develop yourself. And when, by the process of seeing Krishna in the deity form, now we do it mechanically, out of obligation or duty, or sometimes we can't fit it in. But when we do it, just by that act, we're becoming purified. When we accumulate sufficient purity, then we will feel spontaneously, I want to do that. I want to go and see Krishna in the temple. I want to pray to Krishna in the temple. I want to chant his name. That will become, at a further stage of advancement, that will come. That's available to you. That's available to me. But it doesn't come automatic. One has to put some effort to that. And according to the degree that we put our effort, and the degree that we want it, it will come quicker or slower, but it's available to us. So Narada left, as we heard, a boat. You know, the sages leave a boat, they cross over and they leave a boat, so that we also can come to that point. So I may think, or you may think, what's the hope for me? I'm like this, and this. I don't even believe anything. You know, I have so many problems. What's my chances? The same. You just take to this process. Oh, it's very hard. I know it's very hard. But you take to this process. This was Srila Prabhupada's mood. You take it anyway. There is a hope. Yes, at the back.
God, thank you so much.
Yeah.
We identify so strongly with our material families.
Yes.
How can we and should we try and identify with our spiritual eternal?
We have to hear more about Krishna. And then we can take even our experience, this is what I'm saying, the experience here is not reality, that's reality, and this is a semblance. So I can look at this semblance, and Prabhupada said this, you can study yourself and understand something about Krishna. So if I have so much affection for my family, imagine how much affection he has for me. I can use this plane to learn something about that plane. But I must always know this is the shadow, this is the replication of that. That substance, this is not. This will be, it's ephemeral. It's always changing. But in this ephemeral movie, dream-like existence. What can I learn that can help me to understand Krishna? I can understand Krishna from this plane. I can use it in that way. But I have to hear about Krishna as well, otherwise it will become, you know, anthropomorphic. You know, he's like this, he's like that, I'm like this, I'm like that. No, we have to also hear from a transcendental person who can tell us about Krishna without any adulteration. And then our experience, and those two things can combine. This is the process. Now, we have to stop here, but if there are any other questions, perhaps we can speak individually and thus allow the rest of the program to go on. So if there are other questions, I can sit here, yes? And everyone can continue with their breakfast.
Just
yeah.
Shilla Prabhupada.